Sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
We choose directly who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho. This is Will Bluewater coming to you from a level 2 disaster area in East Tennessee, where they say the equivalent of F2 tornado hit all over this county and several others. We still have several thousand people without power here, and ours has only been up for a little over about a day and a half, something like that. And so we've been enjoying Hell Week here. And there's been a lot going on besides that. Anyway, we want to welcome Brian Kutza as our guest this evening. And we've got the ever-present, the ever-ebullient, the all-knowing, all-seeing Mark the Badger Borchetting.
Yeah, right. Oh, we got our special request for people.
Oh, yeah.
If they can do... a little prayer for the Hopi elder grandfather Martin.
Oh,
he's kind of sick right now, and so he could use a little extra prayer.
Absolutely, absolutely, and well, it's good to good to be with you guys. We missed last week because I had just went to bed about a half an hour. I go to bed pretty late, stay up pretty late, and I've been asleep maybe 5 minutes when the lights went out here and last Saturday, and boy, I'll tell you, I fancy myself somewhat of a prepper, but you know, my backup plan didn't work, and I know things can get really dicey when it gets cold, and we hope things will be okay for Grandfather Martin. Anyway. Brian, if what we'd like to do is we like to do a Mayan birth reading on our guests, and are you up for? Do you mind publicly letting people know what your full birth date is? Otherwise, we could do it privately.
If that's how it's going to roll, let's just
sure,
go with
sure.
It.
Yeah, tell Mark your full birthday. and he'll...
Sure, Mark.
He'll put a... Put all that to his magic machine, and which we'd like him to tell you a little bit about too, and because he's developed some really interesting software around the Mayan calendar, and
okay.
But go ahead, Brian. What's your birthday?
It is June 26th, 1968. And I believe when somebody looked at a clock and announced that it was actually the time, it was 8:13 in the morning.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, that won't change stuff very much then. June 26, 1968.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just a second. Let me get going here. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to do two parts of the reading. First part's going to be what your reading is in a traditional Mayan calendar, your day count. And that would be a day called 5 Chuan or 5 Bats in the Guatemala Mayan, they would call it. And these things are composed of two things, the number 5 and then the Chuan glyph. So 5 is the day number and Chuan is the glyph. And 5 has to do with things especially about the elevation and things that elevate creation. Make it rise. And in the Mayan numbering system, when they move from one system in their dot bar system, they'll zero out a level. But that also implies a movement upward, an elevation of things. This number 5 also relates to the fifth element, the ether. So you may have found that playing a prominent role in your life. Actually, but yeah. Especially ether when it has to do with elevation of creation. and it has a partnering energy that's would be the that one has to deal with completion of energies, especially in the material realm of things, and it would really focus on things, especially like at the top, the capstone of a pyramid. So you would probably feel pretty much right at home sitting on top of a pyramid, I think. But it's more of a partnering energy, so there might be someone else up there that would be sitting there with you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that that is sitting in the Manique cycle. And Manique is a healing energy glyph. It's also called related to the hand. If you especially put your first finger and your thumb together in a circle, and have the other fingers kind of sitting up, that would kind of look like a magnetic glyph. It also has to do with deer, and so you may have things showing up in your life that you know have to deal with deer. There's something in the Tibetan story a long, long time ago. Golly, I can't even remember what it is now, but if you look it up and look up deer, you know, then you'll find it pretty easily.
Okay.
So that might be something for you to look at. Now we're going to take a swing into probably a little bit more of what Blue Otter was referring to. This is another Zulcan that's a harmonic level. I guess you could say it's sort of above the current Mayan one because it's based up on it, but it's a growth out of it. And it actually looks at things from both the forward flow of time, the backward flow of time, and where these two time flows come together into what you'd call a balancing, a zero point, or, you know, a gateway, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. So
exactly,
we'll be looking
singularity.
At that now. Huh?
Perhaps
what's
a singularity.
That?
A singularity.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Same idea, yeah. So we're going to look at that now and see what it says. And on the forward flow has a something that here that's talking about, has to do a lot with light and mirroring of light. Things about molding order, eternity of things, presence, ascending in presence, especially in things that have to deal with power of heart, good virtues, loyalty, you know, friendship, and all that kind of stuff. It indicates probably since birth you've probably had a pretty good knack at valuing those types of things, and also a willingness to make sacrifices for others, you know, friendships or family or whatever, different things around, and things maybe even just for yourself to maybe gain a spiritual knowledge or awareness. I wouldn't be surprised with this one if even as a small child you may have had some interesting experiences in seeing things possibly with your eyes. You may have even seen things like, you know, what we call orbs, or even smaller, like little prana or chi energy floating around in the air. you may have been able to see that possibly.
Yes, since childhood.
And you still might be able to, you know, if it didn't get beat out of you when you were a kid.
Well, I can assure you it didn't get beat out of me, but it's actually quite amplified.
Okay, yeah. So that's on the forward flow. On the backward flow, guess what we have sitting there coming up again? The 5-2-N that we just talked about. It's coming back here again. So this is very interesting because this sometimes happens with people, but I don't see it very often where the two Zolkins having an exact match alignment like that. It can happen, but it's not that often. What that's telling me is when I did your reading on the 5-2-N before with the current Mayan calendar, this isn't another Zolkin is aligning on the same thing. That's telling me it's connecting these things on a forward, backward flow type of thing between the two harmonic orders. What that seems to suggest is that's important. So these things I'm getting ready to tell you now are going to talk a little bit about more about what I was talking about, the pyramid and all that other stuff before. But it's going to be a little bit more additional information, and this is going to be a little bit more from the perspective of the next world cycle coming back and connecting with us. So this will give you a little bit more idea what to do with that. And it's talking about working with how our illusion of our reality flows. A lot here about the supernatural things and power of that, and also ancestors. So I would suggest it will be probably very helpful for you to do some prayers, meditations, or however you do it, and seek some guidance from ancestors. And these could be ancestors anywhere, actually. I suspect, since the deer thing and the Tibetan thing popped into my head before, you may have some ancestors back in that realm.
Yeah.
You know, so going back and looking at that deer thing and the symbology of it in the Tibetan thing might be very valuable. It's also a very important animal totem in the Mayan. The deer is very significant as well. So even looking at that may be beneficial for you. It also has some bringing in on this one. It has some eagle energy, mind, vision, revelations of things. So this is a kind of a partnering energy with the deer and the other energy and the ancestors. So that will tie in possibly with the whole thing about the prophecy of the eagle and the condor, the north and the south, and how the eagle and the condor come together and fly in the same sky and all that.
Yes.
That, the eagle energy will be partnering. So some of this ancestor stuff might be connecting into that. But where they're really going to probably help you, I would suggest, is probably going to be how to work with how our reality is works. How, you know, what they call the Maya or the illusion of things. I suspect that these ancestors are going to really help you take that up several notches. Where you, who knows, maybe you'd be walking through some rock walls or something. they're also going
to
help you with...
I said I'm completely open to that. Sounds,
yeah.
I'm completely in alignment where everything's been going through, yeah.
They're also going to be able to... Two other things to look for possibly with these ancestors is Venus, planet Venus, and also the star system of Arcturus. Those two things. And also these ancestral things, maybe even the eagle energy and vision, and they may be linked. Some of those ancestors probably have a connection with eagle energy too. So if you see if you do a vision quest or something, you see an eagle, that eagle could be linked to an ancestor somewhere. And they will. One of the other topics that they're probably going to guide you is on oneness. Amatakiasan Namayan Inlakas, which means I am another you. How everything, we are actually all one. The fact that we think we're separate in individuals and stuff is actually just part of the illusion. So they're probably going to take that up a couple notches on you too, and give you a real good understanding of that if you make a good connection. Where these two come together, and at that, so that was the backward flow of time. Now we're going to go where these two time flows unite and come together. And that one is talking a lot about things that deal with art, attraction of art, creation of things, and power of intention is going to be very significant for you moving from between worlds and between realms. Also, things that have to do with the sun, energies of it, life, warrior courage type things. It's also bringing in that same thing about I said about Venus and Arcturus. That's coming up here again. So I would say either one or both of those are something to really maybe pay attention to. If you see things coming up in your life just popping out and that getting into that, probably something to pay attention to. And this one is really a lot about creating things, your power of intention and desire, and centering that, balancing it, is going to be a real key thing. And if you do that, then things are going to work really well. Now, that has a partnering energy, this one, of Hunebku, creator, in Mayan sense. Hunebku, the one giver of all movement and measure. That's going to go back to the illusion of reality and how that works, the movement and measure of things. That's be another thing to look for. But where this is going to lead on this one is into peace. So one of the things that's going to help on things where you're targeting how to build up peace in the world, everywhere, whatever, within yourself, it's going to be here that's going to be working on. It's going to be a piece that's directly related to Creator.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
I would like a moment to reflect on that because, in all openness and honesty, I mean, here it is that I've given you a piece of information about my birth cycle. And we're speaking about cyclical actions of creation, of beginning and end or flow or direction, if you will, that always merge into a singularity of oneness, of the all, one creator and one creation. And there's no separation from any of that. So it's interesting because I've been walking through this life. I call myself like a scavenger, not a stranger, a scavenger, because I've always had one foot in another world. I'm always scavenging between dimensional aspects of the whole of self and seeing the connection of the entire web and fabric. And it's been a real interesting ride because it always leads back that all directional travel is simply in a spherical sense and comes back to the center, the centroid of that sphere. So I always sit in that space, if you will. That's what I call it, basically. The center of that sphere, quietly watching the storm, like parading around at the illusion of creation and where it is I put my attentiveness to. And that's given me a real sense of, if you will, a calmness to be able to move through many storms. You know, and we see the earth, you know, the Maya of the earth is creating a new balance as well with the conditions of what's happening on the planet. And we're in those storms, those microcosmic events, but how we relate to them as being hellish or just simply being at one with the ice and the loss of power, which is also an illusion of what we've given ourselves and technology, that would be at one with the land and fuse with that and fuse ourselves again with natural and cosmic law orders, then we find ourselves balanced and content in that space. We know we always have a coat to wear and a shelter that's over our head, and all those things are always still there for us as backup systems, but to not really put a charge polarity on anything. And so if we just stay in that calm space, we're able to see much deeper into the thyself, but ultimately into all of creation. And so those visionings that you spoke of as a child, yeah, I've actually passed on in this physical body a couple times already, on a table, on a cliff, in a car, and they're like, he's out of here. But I came back, and I come back every time, and more stuff just turned on, basically. It's just like the system's working, and it's like you can't really tell everybody everything that's actually working because it's a little concerning to others. But I've used that as a guiding gift to, you know, basically make a union with thyself in all aspects to create a balance that I spoke of just a second ago, and you did too, where the flow forward and the flow backward, so to speak, both merge in a single point, and the same message was coming back to meet itself. And there we have the ringing tone. And that message basically is that we're sitting completely still. There's no forward or backward to any of it. It's just simply inward. And when we embrace all of that, our gifts completely expand and encompass of the relationship and the responsibility of being in all. And so you could sense everything from the concrete that you stand on and its consciousness, its vibration, to, you know, some other, the blue beaches of Venus. You mentioned Venus a few times. I kind of chuckle inside because I have an awakened awareness of my two souls encoding of how I came to be in physical form this time right now on this planet, and the direction and path to travel mapped fully. And one of the places was the dimensional gateway through Venus, is one of the aspects a lot of us came through to be here. And so I have a real epiphany, if you will, going back to that dimensional gateway and standing at that chasm and looking back into the space that we were created from, knowing that I was birthed through the cave, through the darkness, into the light. And I know that's what a lot of the elders and everybody that's on the planet that ever has any kind of sense of union with natural law and cosmic relationships holds that keyway inside them and vibrates them in voice and in drawing and spoken word, dance. And they bring that message again and again of the ways that we came through of being in creation and to hold that sense of balance when we're doing it. So I appreciate the, it's kind of funny. I actually have to say that on a very human aspect of who I am as well, that it's just funny to be like so rawly exposed just that quickly of, I give you a piece of information, you start feeding back info basically back to me as if I'm like removed from myself, you know, and I'm looking back into this like crystal ball, the sphere of you know, the ideal self again. And so I thank you for doing that. It's actually kind of fun, and fun when more people have those gifts to, do that for others to help us to accelerate and grow, basically, as a community back in whole and union and harmony again. So thank you, Mark.
Well, and it's another neat thing that you can do. Well, first let me say that I was introduced to this by my friend since about 1985, Robert Shrewsbury. Robert's was a good friend of mine, elder Carlos Barrios, and Carlos wrote a book in Spanish about concerning Mayan astrology. And Robert explained to me that the best time to do a vision quest is on your Mayan birthday, and which comes around every 9 months. And boy, I'll tell you. it really, really works. It the first time I did it, it took me about 5 minutes to get the answer that I needed to know, and the information that I got led me right to where I am today. And it's just some amazing information, and it really does help you. A lot of people are just kind of wondering, you know, who am I? You know, what's my function here, and what am I supposed to do? Where am I going? And helps you understand yourself better, and you know where you stand in the universe, and kind of what your job is. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Mark? I'm not sure whether Mark's still on with us. I think he took a phone call. He'll be back in a second.
Okay.
But hang on for 1 minute for a little message about how you can get your own reading and also help us stay on the air. Hang on. Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now. And especially right now, I want to express my gratitude to the people that helped my wife and I this month. I got an email last night saying that our payment had been declined, and we had to pull out and spend several days at a motel and eating out, so it ate up things, but we're okay, and we got the help that we need and to stay on the air. And so Brian, now you live out what, on the West Coast?
Yeah, I'm here in Pasadena, just right on the edge of Los Angeles in the mountains here. Yeah.
Oh, well, I remember Pasadena. I sure do. Yeah,
a lot of people do.
Well, when I was a kid, you know, I kind of grew up from 61 to 64 in Santa Monica. And then we moved to Newport Beach and stayed there for a couple more years. But I remember my mom loved the Rose Bowl parade. And a lot of people will go out early and set up their chairs up and wait for the parade. And I remember, I think we're in the third row or something, and my mother was an avid photographer. And I remember one of her most embarrassing moments when one of the first floats came along with the flying the American flag, and everybody in front of her stood up, which is what you're supposed to do, and she hollered down in front. But yeah, Pasadena, beautiful, beautiful place. And you know, growing up in California back in the '60s, it was a great place. Haven't been in Southern California for many years, and other than this, I dropped out of graduate school in 99 to go trucking, and you know, have been out there dropping some of the loads from time to time, but it's a completely different place now than it was. I remember when I was first starting to drive, my mom would, you know, shield her eyes, you know, as if I was going to crash the car or something like that. And then I remember the first time I got in the car, after I got married and grew up, the first time I got in the car with her on like this 5-lane interstate there near Santa Ana, and she's getting on this on-ramp, you know, she just nails it. And then I was the one that was throwing my arms up. And boy, it's a completely different place. And, you know, there, an atmosphere like that, you've really got to figure out a way to find some peace. And
yes,
and so, yeah, that's what we're all about. So,
yeah,
so tell us.
It could be a challenge to some in this environment, but I think that the sanctuary that we're all given, the vessel, your body, is your temple. So what you make of that is you carry that wherever you go in physical, you know, form, as well as others. But that place that you can endeavor in and have a balance is your own ecosystem that you get to derive. And it doesn't matter what your concurrent or your environment is about. If you're in balance and allowance to accept all of creation, then everything just simply moves through you. And you don't have any attachments to anything, or you don't have a charge about it. You're not fighting anything. And so it doesn't matter if words or traffic or any of those kind of concerns, that you just kind of keep, you know, in check, basically. I'm not talking about checking out. I'm actually talking about checking further in. And that's the funny thing about that, is that most people would consider that like, well, you know, you're not really dealing with reality or whatever, you know. And you know, Californians, they're a little bit more laid back, which is actually kind of nice, because they might be considered laid back compared to some of the other aspects of the world, but it's because they're more open to receive information and see things in a different form or a different angle, a different perception. I think that's the beauty of what we have available to us out here. And it's kind of a nice thing.
Is there some steps, you know, you're talking about kind of helping get around some of these problems and stuff people have to deal with day-by-day basis, and kind of getting, you know, back in a peaceful state where they can think halfway decently, or, you know, react better or whatever. Are there some techniques or simple things that, you know, a couple simple things that you've learned that might help some of the people listening?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the best things that anyone could do for themselves is the first, sit up and have a decent posture. And second is the breathe. That light that you bring into the vessel, the body, is your life force. It doesn't matter how much food you consume or water you drink. That's all part of this other aspect of ourselves, the density part. But the ether and the light, you know, the bond to the relationship of the fifth element, there's two other elements that come in combination with that as we breathe into the vessel and we make that exchange, that cycle. And our energy is basically conductively built upon that pillar, that very first pillar of light. And so breathing, full breath that is making it into your diaphragm, in other words, filling your lungs, not forcing, but gently filling your lungs, is so empowering that that'll just take it to, you're awake, your brain's working, you got enough oxygen, you basically are, you know, things are functioning properly. And that's one of the first things I always tell somebody is, you know, breathe. Because once you get a coupling and a relationship with yourself about how you're breathing and really paying attention to that, you'll start paying attention to the food that you're eating, the quantities, the timing of things. You'll listen to other people more attentively. Everything kind of starts to shift from that place. In other words, your awareness becomes deepened at every step that you immerse yourself along that path, you know, in the journey. And the journey is a wiggly, squiggly line of up and down, left, right, all of, you know, spirals. But you're still on the path, you know. So never really, you know, be too hard on yourself, which, you know, I've gone through many times like that to figure this out. And just kind of keep it even keeled. You know, nothing's really as serious as we all make it out to be, I can tell you that for sure. We know that this too shall pass. Just saying those words alone, and you like actually can bond to the relationship of what that actually means, and knowing that you're a part of all, then everything that's happening around you is just for this moment. And it's just in part of a larger cycle, and it's repeating itself. And you can just kind of like be the observer in all of it. And so when you do that, you have a tendency to begin to decharge, not have a charge about everything, not have a push and a pull, a fight. And it doesn't take away the reason for being a creator or a destroyer for that matter, because both are one and the same. It just makes you more of an operator, the person and the being that's actually immersed deeper into the reality, seeing the illusions as well as the real life force, the real energy that's there behind those illusions, you know, and can tap into that. So a lot of people do meditation. I've led a lot of meditation groups and cycles with that, breath work shops. I do the crystal bowls. Oh, boy, I tell you, you get vibrational cycles of, like, I guess you could probably relate to maybe drumming or something like that. And vibrational frequencies of quartz and crystals vibrating, attuned to the liquid crystals that are inside of our bodies. And, man, you talk about a quick journey. You're out of that body immediately. You're leaving physical form, and you're going up to these other worlds and other aspects of your whole. And so those things are all very conductive and conducive to, you know, being more in allowance with everything and in harmony with it. And for me, only the biggest challenge that I have today is that, you know, that I still push on a little bit, you know, because some people are like, oh, you're a rainbow warrior, you're this, you're that, you're whatever. And I hear the words and I let them just, I'm like, thank you. And I just let them flow through me. And I allow that to be part of my whole, but I don't bond to it. Instead, I look at what most of what's happening on our planet is actually an imbalance with natural law. So we're actually, there's like a war on nature going on across the planet at whole. And whether it's about imbalance of men warring men, or men spraying chemicals in the sky, or changing the food types that we get to choose from, is all stuff that we're, you know, we can get really seriously charged over. And in doing that, you actually are beginning to give away your life force and your power to those illusions. And in doing that, you are feeding into exactly why those illusions were created to begin with. And once you realize that, you can become your own powerful entity by not giving yourself away to the illusion. And you begin to help others. And you do that by helping yourself first. Because if yourself is not intact, and is not the divine reflection to help the others around you, you've got some problems going on, basically. And usually most of those people, when you get that imbalance, you're already giving away so much of your life force that your physical form is depleted, you're aged quickly, you're stressed, your mind doesn't function, you get diseased, things like that happen. And so that's always a way that your body's communicating back to you for you to find that wake-up call. Whether it's a mirror that you wake up to in the morning in the bathroom and you see yourself and you're like, oh my goodness, what's going on here? Or somebody around you, you know, is giving you this message three times in a row and you've heard it for the third time. You're like, oh boy, it really does have value, you know. But those are just normal things. And first off, it's breath and food. I would tell you, you change your food types you eat. You be bonded one with nature. I mean, that's my greatest teacher. I don't have religion or schooling or institutions. I mean, I've done all that, have degrees and things that are powerful on paper, but it's just paper. It's not who I am and what I am and what I do. I'm not a doer. I'm not a worker. I'm not part of the doing tribe. And so, you know, for me to watch bees or ants move around and watch the leaves on a tree is much more enthralling than the working and doing tribe. I learn a lot about the cosmos and nature and my place in it, and I see how man and you know, the animal kingdom, plant kingdom, crystalline kingdoms are all intertwined with each other, and the fabric actually becomes very real. It's not an illusion. What is considered to be illusion by most men is actually more real, is actually the heart and the breath of the planet you stand upon. And yeah, you see and sense all that, and you know your place in it. And then whatever, somebody might use the word, I'll use the word work right here. Then the real work begins. And you refocus and recalibrate, and you move forward, so to speak, in space. Yeah, I love crystals because I'll go to that real quick right here, because you know, you're basically, your vessel, your body is a liquid crystal. It's electromagnetic pulsing cycles of biochemistry and blah blah blah, and I can speak technical or whatever language, but it's the presence of that, is that crystals communicate on a cosmic law formula, basically. And the vibrations that come through cosmic order are eons and then timeless. They're ageless. There's no boundaries to any of that. And they've grown in ways and shaped themselves without charge about what they're receiving. They just simply receive it, have grown under those circumstances, and are ready to relate it to you. And so they're just waiting for you to have a relationship with them. And so I've learned to work with the elements of the planet that we're on. And the planet is mostly crystalline. You know? We run around the surface like a piece of paper thin with an atmosphere that looks like a piece of paper of blue line that's from space. When you look at it, you start laughing about how unimportant most of the things we do upon this planet are, except for to actually have a relationship with each other and with the living entities of this creation. And we look at the surface and we barely go into it and we find all this magic that's there, and power and things that can be pulled out of it, have a sacred nature to them, have ceremony around them, and be handed as we're basically just, you know, moving things around. Nothing changes. It's just you move around the surface and you're the steward to it. You have no ownership. You don't own anything. You don't control anything. So being open to those things, you are open to receive and you're open to give. And that keeps you in natural law and in natural flow cycles. So you stay healthier just doing those things, you know? So, yeah, I think that, breath, proper water, proper food types. Some people might say you need sleep. I laugh because I do a lot of design work besides this, and I might get like a few hours of sleep per night for weeks, you know, and so you learn that there's other ways for you to recharge the body. The body doesn't necessarily need to go to sleep. It needs to rest and repair. And so you learn to use words differently and you learn to cycle your body differently. And after that, if you're really focused, you can give yourself the attentive nature of meditation, which is actually going deep within to find all the cycles that are inside the body and the spirit. And then through that gateway, obviously, you connect with ancestors. You connect with those aspects of yourself that are dimensionally, you know, in other creations. And you learn to have a relationship with all that. So sitting either above or below the pinnacle of the pyramid, it's not very enticing to me personally. Because the pyramid is just a form. And so we understand why the capstone's gone. There never was a capstone on the pyramid ever, because that completion of that cycle would terminate the very meaning and existence of that pyramid itself as a symbol. So it was left off on purpose, never stolen. Nothing like that ever happened. But I think what's most interesting on this planet is that all of us were birthed through the mother in these vessels as light coming through the darkness of a cave. Whether it be we came from within the earth, outwardly expressed, and that everything culturally is the same across the planet. Pyramids are everywhere. Circular pyramids are everywhere. Languaging is all similar. Math seems to be everywhere. Geometry is unfolded the same way everywhere. It's all exactly the same, and how could that be if we didn't all come from the same place? So as soon as we start fighting about things that we think are creating separation and differences and what the ideology is, the differences between one and another, then we'll actually be in harmony again. And I know that's what ultimately, you know, I feel a lot, and I feel a lot, and I even try to say these words that those of tribes of Indian nations have gone through great painful times for no reason other than to know that they themselves were those that were in power all along, and that no power was ever taken away but was actually given. And it's messed up if you think about what I just said, because It's just the energy is still sitting right there inside the divine spark of every single entity being of those tribes. But they feel like it is not there. And I want that all to awaken again. That divine spark is inside of every single one of us equally. It can be ignited, it can burn any cord, burn through any illusion, brilliantly lighting the way of truth. And I want that to. I want to see that again. I mean, I somewhere inside of me, I attribute all this that anything that I could do relative to nature, since I was a kid, is not just about passing on and dying and coming back to life and having lots of spirits, like physically, like seeing them, talking to them, but that inside of me is the bloodline of Cherokee through my grandmother's side. My mother and the grandmother had Cherokee, her mother. And so that came through the bloodline, and I've always attributed that the reason I grew up on an island down in Florida, I'd spent 99% of my time out in nature, not talking to anybody, and seeing spirit, and digging in the Indian mounds, and walking with the flamingos, and swimming with the sharks, and things like that. It's all because I was already in tune with natural law through the bloodlines that were given to me. And so from that place, I spoke with spirit, and it's never stopped. And I've always carried rocks in my pocket that nobody ever understood what they were, not even me at that time, to laugh about that those were crystals and the earth was talking to me and the cosmos was awakened inside of me. And so I've carried this message with me all this time of this life passing on, but I teach others as best I can when it's the right time to do so, and I don't force anything because it all has its moment. We've already passed from one world into the next. I saw the splitting of the worlds years ago. I was drawing it in my books. I draw and write a lot. And in my books, like several years ago, we had already entered the fifth gateway, and we'd already all decided our union of self as being, quote-unquote, divided again as the L and the Ma, or the electrical and the magnetic, the pulses of life and giving themselves were split in duality, and we had chosen. And now we're all seeming like, it seems like the planet holistically is really starting to wake up to that new world is here. Like they're starting to see it around them, you know, that we're almost there. We are there. Something seems to be like here with us now. And it's because we've already made that choice. And we're living in it. As soon as you change your perception, the way you see things, the way you feel things, is the way that you will be with things. Everything will change instantaneously in that moment of singularity. Forward and backward timelines collapse, and you're just simply present. Boom. Right there. And you know what's funny? It's the same place you already were. You didn't go anywhere. You simply accepted the relationship with thyself, with divinity, with natural law and cosmic orders. You embraced all of it, and everything becomes available to you. That was a divine gift that was given all of us across this planet. And we have the freedom of choice. One of the temporal measures that is constantly manipulated by certain forces on the planet to gather the soul energies properly for their usages, but that is still a choice that can never be taken away. And so when you know the rules, a little bit of the engagement, you can enter even a battle in calmness, not of a charge, not of a need to prove that you're right or to destroy the other, to make yourself be present and the existing left party behind. But instead, you operate calmly as the creator, the destroyer, and the operator. And you play all those roles, both masculine and feminine. And so you see the big picture from the eagle's perspective of those that fly high above is a half of a foot out of this world and a half a foot in the other one. And you see the bigger picture always. And you place yourself back down into the space of the forest where others can be lost because they can't see a distance, and you're the deer with the camouflage of the spot, and you carry the softness of the message of the mother So you can be all these things at one time. It's been given to you. So I really wish upon this planet that I see this immediate awakened state of what was blessed and given to us. And it's never been taken away, that we just awaken to that again, and that all cultures become as one again. And that is the greatest achievement that man will ever make, is just to simply embrace the ideal of all men and all women and all of creation again.
Have you been told from any traditional Cherokee sources a little bit about the relationship between Cherokees and crystals?
No. You know what's interesting? I dug in basically the island that I grew up on was made out of shell mounds. So in shell mounds I found artifacts and things like that, but I never really found like crystals. I found something that was double terminated smoky crystal. I did find that. That was one of the things that carried around, but I never understood how it was tied to Indian culture.
Well, you might pick up Diani Wahoo's book. She's a keeper of a crystal ark. And there's another woman, if she's still alive, her name is Jean Bustos, Bustos, and she lives near Santa Fe, and she's, to my knowledge, they're the last two crystal women. There may be more, but what little I know is this, and that is that the Cherokee worked with crystals, and that other tribes were afraid of crystals for some reason, but we had a very close relationship with crystals. And one story I was told was that during a certain time of year that we would do a ceremony where we would build a structure that was completely light-proof except for a small hole that was in a certain direction, which I do not know, but I just know that on a certain time of year, people would assemble in the structure, and they would slide a huge crystal point into that hole. And I understand that the light show was simply spectacular. The only other thing I know, from traditional Hebrew sources is that that Noah's Ark was lit. It was hermetically sealed, but there was a hole in the top of the ark, and a huge crystal was gathered the light and refracted it, and that was their light source during the time of the deluge, which every tribe on earth remembers, a story of something like the flood. But yeah, I wanted to pass that on to you.
Thank you.
Did your family pass along to you? Give you any idea what clan you may have come down from or any other information?
No, I haven't. Actually, that would only be passed on if I pursued by asking questions, which this conversation actually has reopened me back up to those sources. So I will look further into this, actually. Because looking back at the history of the island itself, that was just an incredible opportunity, basically, of a way to live your life, and that was very natural as well. And the gifts that came through all the Indian cultures that were in that area, too, is just something we just kind of grew up with. We never really, thought much different that was just a way of being. But I do know that a lot of people that I meet, relatives specifically, I mean, there's lots of ridiculous stories that are out there about Indian culture in general. But a lot of the people that I meet that actually have certain bloodlines in them are much more attuned to really like cosmic and natural orders. Like they could really see and sense about what's happening, like right around them. Like we have lots of visions all the time. I'm always visioning, never turns off, it seems like. And that's just all induced by simply being calm, quiet, and drinking proper water and having lots of crystals around you. So it's interesting, but a couple of people that I've met that specifically said they're from Cherokee lines, and it's really funny that I've run into one after another, not a different bloodline, which is the really funny thing to me, is that I run into similar events out of these people that they've kind of grew up and always saw and spoke with spirit and were really pretty much into nature. You know, we might live in houses and still have, like, we're near a city, like I am. It's a huge megalopolis. You know, I mean, come on, the city's crazy here. But at the same time, we're very grounded. We're very much in tune with a much bigger picture that's playing itself out. And I think that just comes to the culture itself, you know, that
well,
gifted to us.
There's definitely a bloodline thing, too. Because I know the different clans, you know, had different gifts. And, well, long story made short, I'd like to invite you and any other Cherokee descendant out there that would like a spiritual relationship with a Cherokee nation that's recognized by a North American government. I'd like you to go to CherokeeDiscovery.com and invite you to enroll in the Cherokee Nation of Mexico. Cherokee Nation of Mexico, a lot of people don't know that after the Cherokee migrated across the Eastern Ocean, that we started in Mexico and we moved up this direction. And, you know, about 15 years ago, I started telling people that, you know, there was an M and or at least an R sound in our language that no longer existed. And I had so many people, you know, laugh their heads off. Oh, that's true. Well, you know, the Eastern Band, you know, now has that information on their Wikipedia that, Dr. Charles Yatlohi Rogers has done a series of talks with me and on Prophecy Keepers Radio, and has talked about our people and about the fact that in 1720, the largest part of the nation actually migrated back to Mexico, and that is why Sequoia died in Mexico. Sequoia, the inventor of the Cherokee alphabet, on his third attempt to connect with these people, and he did find some. Died in Mexico, and in 1860, the main body communicated with the people in Tahlequah, letting them know that, hey, you know, we're the people that migrated down here, and we've been at Lake Chapala, and we're moving southward, and it's very possible that we have a lot of these children that migrated up here last year. Fulfilling another prophecy, oddly enough, a Mormon prophecy, that when they came, they would come like a grand march of angels, which is, you know, a very forceful thing. But we've got a lot of relatives. You know, we're the largest tribe in the world. The ethnologists estimate there's between 6 and 10 million Cherokee descendants in the world. But I want to extend that invitation to you. It's absolutely free. Anybody out there that wishes to be adopted, we adopt people into the priestly Ani Galohi Longhair clan. But anyway, yeah, you know, welcome. I'm not surprised you're a Cherokee, but you got a real gift there, I understand what you're saying about, you know, I have a lot of dreams and. You know, this week especially has been really hard. I've had family members come to me and give me information, when you need them, they're there, they always will be. Didn't mean to get off on that, Jack, but I did want to extend that invitation to you.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah. I'm actually in front of a computer, so while you're saying that, I'm actually perusing that information.
If you might have to turn your speakers off because the entire website is. You still there? Yeah, the entire website is. Oh, I'm hearing a lot of clicking on the line. Are you still with us?
I am.
Okay. Yeah, something happened. But if you had some information like. If you knew, knowing where your people were, you know, a couple hundred years ago, would give you some idea what your clan is also. I come down from Wolf Clan people, and I'm lucky enough to have pieces of my Cherokee genealogy back to about 1500, thanks to a cousin of mine that lives in Florida, and a lot of Cherokees in Florida. But I think we, Mark, are you there? Who do we have on the line? I guess we lost Mark.
Here.
Yeah, I guess we lost Mark. So anyway, yeah, he'll call back in. But yeah, there was a lot of clicking and everything going on online. And we've got another half hour to go. But you know, if you get to the point where sometimes. People don't need an hour and a half or 2 hours to tell, you know, what they have to say. But if you want to, please continue tell us about yourself and your path and what you do.
Well, if you have any questions for me, it'd be fantastic. Like, the more articulate you are, the more articulate I become. Otherwise, we're just in a journey together, which is not a problem.
Mark's back on the line.
Good. I mean, if anybody ever has a question for myself, like specifically, they could email me at that crystallinetemples@gmail.com. And that's the best way to get a hold of me. I use a computer consistently, but we're developing what's called a website here soon because of the number of inquiries about that subject. I actually am a steward for getting a lot of Christology actually out to the planet from different locations on the planet. So that's actually been a lot of fun to be participating in all that. That's been, I think like eight, not must be about the ninth year of doing that basically at this point in time. It's been pretty fun.
Yeah, and if anybody's listening live, you're welcome to call in. And talk to our guest. The number is 347-996-3318. It's right on the page, that browser page that you're using to listen to the program. And I want to thank Mac Boogaloo for arranging this guest. Mac has taken over the responsibility of booking our guest. He's doing a fantastic job. And he is the impresario of Prophecy Keeper Z. You can Google that, Prophecy Keeper Z, instead of with an S at the end. And Mac is going through a lot of our past interviews and upgrading it to make it more enjoyable for the younger generation. And so those are the shout-outs if you want to call and give us a call. Mark, have you got any questions or comments?
Well, I think the whole thing with the crystals is interesting. It reminded me as I was talking, there's a cave you can find it on the internet if you do a search for giant crystals in Mexico. You'll see some pictures and some selenite crystals. They're like, 100 or 50, 40 foot long or just huge. I mean, they're giant. So,
I remember Journey to the Center of the Earth when I was a kid. They came to that certain chamber that had all those crystals, and they're fascinating. They're out of this world.
Yeah, I think that puts a real good perspective on what the Earth actually has to offer us. You know, we always think that, you know, you see something and you just kind of like, you think it's a certain way always, and then all of a sudden the earth just surprises you, like, you know, only a few thousand feet below the surface, which is basically nothing in distance, that there's things that are the size of a building, you know, and that's the Cave of the Crystals. Literally, it's called the Cave of the Crystals, the one with a very large selenite. And leading before that is the Cave of Swords, which has a lot of selenite bars, basically. They're coming off the walls. And you enter that cave source to the Queen's Eye, which is actually a spiral, like a torsioned arrangement of the selenite, where you have to make it through this gate, like this little twisted path, and you bounce up, you actually expand into that the Cave of Crystals, as they call it. And then there's several that go after that place, you know. But what an incredible find that they did in Mexico there. And I know they're trying to, they're considering building a tram, like a tunnel diagonally down to that, so you could actually visit it and make it one of the natural wonders on the planet. But there's a lot of controversy about that, because you're taking away the water and the life force for the crystals to continue to grow. That's always, you know, again, we're interrupting natural law. And it's interesting, because literally crystals are very much alive. There's no doubt about that. I've proven that over and over again to people who get involved with the crystallogy, that they start realizing that the crystal actually adapts and changes to their environment or the way they're interacting with it. It produces new rainbows. It seems to be self-healing. Things are constantly changing about them, not only the messages and the vibrations that come through, but mostly the light and the way they hold form. So that place, thanks for bringing that up, because just recently I had the opportunity to see a couple really large pieces from those caves. I say large, but they're much smaller than what you see in the pictures, at the Tucson Gem and Minerals Show. And that was actually quite spectacular to be able to stand and actually see, you know, as they're digging, don't forget, down to those places or trying to excavate, get to them. There's lots of things they have to move through in order to find those huge caverns. So they pull out lots of smaller pieces and stuff like that. Pretty spectacular. And the beautiful part to me is, like, not only is selenite one of my favorite crystals, because its clarity is like a truth bringer. Whenever you use selenite, it has no polarity, so it has ability to neutralize fields and create a stillness. And in that arrangement, you are gifted the basically abilities to hear, like, in other words, to listen to the messages within. And so I often give selenite out in pretty large quantities to most people, because that is one of the first things that will help to quiet and calm space for them to change themselves, but more importantly, to get the messages, like, from ancestors, from those that have passed on other worlds, you know, whatever you might need to connect with, you know, angelic realms. These kind of things come through a lot clearer, like it's a much clearer channel then. So, some of them are holding water.
Well, I'm now remembering some other things about crystals. I've been widowed twice, and I'm in with my third wife. My second wife went through a traditional Cherokee healing ceremony. And during the ceremony, they used a crystal, a gourd, and spring water. And what she would do is the crystal was held in her hand while the priest read the sacred formula. And depending on what color the crystal turned, and in her case it turned yellow, the priest would know which a medicine to administer. And it's almost reminiscent of because it uses the four colors. It's kind of like the healing system that they have in Afghanistan, which is based on the four humors, which are associated with the different colors. But it was really interesting. But to clear the crystal, it was put into the gourd with the spring water, and he continued to finish reading the formula, and then she would be given the remedy. Another little tidbit I picked up was that since 1890 or so, of course, it's pretty well known that the Cherokees used to scry, try to figure out which way to go for game. They used crystals in a lot of different ways, but the science of map dowsing is something that's been practiced by Cherokees for a long time. And I understand from speaking with a military intelligence officer who served in the Vietnam era that, and all you Vietnam vets out there, if you're listening and you're wondering how military intelligence came up with the Viet Cong troop movements, they learned from Cherokees the method of map dowsing. And it's a fascinating subject. And I'm trying to remember any other things that I may have picked up along the way. But, it's really fascinating. I don't understand why the other tribes were scared of crystals, but they were pretty much hands-off. It was just us that used them for some reason.
Yeah, I could relate to the I can't really relate to the aspect of the fear around the crystallogy, but I can relate to that through the respect that you really you learn from working with the crystals, that some of them are extremely powerful. So some of them hit like a hammer. I mean, they just come out of nowhere and surge your bioelectric field so intensely that you just feel like you're just going to crack apart. And so I've learned through all these years to work with just mostly water, and working with crystals and water specifically together, we can charge and give frequencies to the water and structure it, and then the water goes into our body, which is mostly water, and is more harmoniously received. And so I make a lot of elixirs like you would, like, I don't know, some people say like you're a medicine man sometimes, which I've joked about, like, oh yeah, right. And now I'm talking about it again, and I'm like thinking, well, yeah, maybe that is more right than I ever thought of before, because I make really complex formulas based on a person's magnetic field. So I read a person's magnetic field with just my hands, and you say dowsing. I use my body to douse. I can look at a map. I can look at a picture. I can look at a person. I can look at anything from afar. I can just close my eyes, read right into it. My body reacts magnetically to that system that I'm having a relationship to. And from that place, I get huge amounts of information that is very much on everything from a micromic level of what's happening on, like, the chemistry of the body to where the injuries were, how a person's recreating stuff from their emotional stress and spirit body, where they might be dimensionally fragmented to, and with the actions of crystals, which have no agendas, but to simply just be who they are, I can communicate with the crystals, have them communicate with each other, and create basically frequencies that help to make a person more harmonious and embracing all those aspects that might be out of alignment or might be, if you will, in their way. Because ultimately, the magnetic positions of the body tell you everything. So just, you know, the same way, it's all the same stuff, like all of us feel and sense when somebody's watching you. All of us feel and sense when somebody actually feels good when they walk into a room. All of us experience these things, but we've never been taught to embrace and nurture those aspects of who we are and how we actually function, let alone embrace people that we feel like might be out of alignment, you know, because we can actually help them. And so the crystals have been a fantastic medium, the crystal kingdom, to make ourselves more open and basically changeable, if you will, and very easily and very conductively. And once that happens, the cycles change. So, you know, you can map something out and read it one day, do Christology and work with these kingdoms, and everything is shifted the next day. You have to reread the system because it's constantly in flow and changing, you know, perpetually. But it's actually a lot of fun, and I've learned that there are certain elements that you simply, for the most part, mankind is not really ready to actually engage. There's just so much levels of stagnancy and crystallization within the body itself that it's not fluid and malleable enough to receive these kind of vibrations. So the same way we use quartz to meditone and give off a consistent frequency to tell time to run computers and things like that, our bodies relate to those same functions. And if you put something in that's going too quickly or hits too much of a volume, basically, level, it would be the same as too much sound came out of the speaker. You can't handle it. You're like, I got to turn that down. And I've just learned that it's better to be very gentle and compassionate with the energy, and just allowing to harmonize is actually creates real change in the system versus trying to, like, hammer through the system. So, I just brought back.
Yeah, don't let anybody give you any grief about, you can't be Cherokee because your skin's not dark. Just tell them that in 1540, according to Vatican records, there was blonde-haired and red-haired Cherokees running around Cherokee streets down here in South Central Tennessee. And end of discussion. Columbus wrote that, you know, a lot of the Indians that he found along the coastline, you know, they had same complexion and hair color and beards, and so the Chickasaw migrated over here also and ended up in Mexico. But I'm sitting here wondering, you know, my second wife Betty was her grandmother was a plant woman, and Betty and I lived near Moab, Utah. And she heard about a workshop over in Cortez, Colorado, having to do with auras. And when the facilitator attempted to find the edge of her aura, he couldn't find it until he got about 20 feet out.
And
he says, "My gosh," he says, "I have never seen it." You know, most people, their aura is, you know, 6 inches, maybe a foot. But that explained to Betty why a lot of things, you know, about how she was never really taught, you know, how to not get drained of your energy. But it also explained why people felt, as particularly animals, you know, were attracted to her, and particularly dogs. And so she had this huge healing aura, but she, you know, she needed to learn, you know, at that point she needed to learn how to not to let energy vampires come and sap her strength. And we know she was Paint Clan, and so they were a clan of healers. There was a couple of clans that were healers, and yeah, you might be Paint Clan. There might be something you want to talk to the ancestors about. And we've got about 10 minutes left. I needed to keep it to about 90 minutes tonight because of some things that are going on. And so if anybody's out there and wants to call in, the number again is 347-996-3318. And barring that, if you got any parting thoughts, give everybody a shot across the bow.
Well, I think if I was to say anything, I would just say that, just to remind you that divine spark exists within, and that to be an allowance for it to actually shine inside the vessel again, to allow you to be buoyant, light, and very embracing of all things in creation around you. If you begin the journey back home, it's through that place, that gateway, that spark. That's what forged everything in the darkness. And the brighter you shine, the better you feel, the more vibrant your life is, and just the more fun you have. It doesn't have to be so serious and thought about, but you'll know immediate feedback-wise if you're in alignment with your purpose, with just the way you're simply being by the way that you feel. And if you remember that one of the largest portions of who we are is the emotional body, even though it's only a few inches away from most people's bodies, and sometimes maybe about 2 feet out, but that could be 300 or 400 feet out when you embrace the way that you feel. And you'll operate at 60-foot dimension with your spirit body. And from that place, you'll start noticing that others notice you as soon as you're in your, anyways near them. You, and at that place, it's feedback system to know that you're in alignment with who you are. It's not ego. It's just your bioelectric field. It's your vibrancy, your life force, your vitality. So embrace that. Do not shun those gifts. And you have everything is turned on. Nothing is turned off in any one of us, ever. If your heart was, this is my favorite, I really wish my heart was open. I hear a lot of people say this. And I kind of chuckle for a second inside, thinking, wow, that's an interesting choice of words. Only for the fact that if your heart was closed, like your energetic system, you'd have some real challenges. I don't think you'd actually physically be here anymore. So it's just a unit of measure. Remember that everything's been given to you. You're fully intact. You're here in the garden right now. And everything is available to you. Just start looking around right where you're standing and accepting all of it and watch how it changes right before your eyes. So peaceful blessings to everybody. And definitely, if you want to know anything about crystals, just feel free to get in touch with me directly.
Yeah, do you know what your
email?
Do you know what your internet domain name is going to be yet?
Well, it'll be Crystalline Temples. That's what it will be, yeah. I mean, I have a guy tinkering around with that. It's just not the highest priority in my world.
Well,
that'll
get them to you.
Yeah.
They'll figure
it out.
And
the email, most people ask me through email or they find me on Facebook. A lot of things happen through Facebook. And holy smokes, private messaging is like off the charts anymore. So.
Oh, yeah. There's a link to your Facebook page and to your YouTube video right here on this page that people are using to listen to the show. Well, thanks a lot, Brian. And I'm sure this isn't the end of our friendship. Welcome, brother.
No, it's
Welcome,
not.
Welcome, brother.
Thanks, bro. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
I appreciate that.
And thank you, Mark, so much. And
take care,
everybody.
Mate.
Yep, take care. Good night now.
Thanks, Mark.
Join us to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Friends, this is your co-host, Will Blue Otter. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. Wale washi yen, a te no maki ayo miya nangene, a te na mechi ho o miya nangene yo wa, a shi ya che che che. As Blue Otter, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember.